It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Today with us, we have Dave Komar, who is a retired U.S. Army Brigadier General, president of EOA Inc., author and speaker and executive coach. And he is an expert in helping organizations change. We're going to plumb the depths of his experience, starting with how he the Army, in his military experience, realized that culture was important. We'll talk a little bit about his book, and ultimately we're going to discuss, or what I want to get to, is the transformation. How do you actually, and this is what his clients are asking now, how do you get these big organizations to change? So Dave, thanks so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Josh.
I really appreciate it. Okay, so tell me, so you spent how many years in the Army?
A little over 31 years.
31 years in the Army. All right. So you raised you got to the rank of Brigadier General. What was the moment when you thought, oh my gosh, culture is really important? Was there a moment in your leadership career there that kind of gave you that insight, hit you upside the head, as they were?
Josh, absolutely. In fact, it goes way, way before that, even. When I was 16, 17 years old, I was working in a department store in a mall. Think of like a Target that would be an anchor store in a mall. And we had one general manager and two assistant managers. And one assistant manager was over, we called soft line, so clothing, et cetera. And then one over hard line, so automotive, home improvement, sporting goods, et cetera. When you looked at that store, you would have thought it was two different stores. There was one side of the store that you'd see the assistant manager down there talking to people, teaching the people various things, helping them out during the rush periods. And everybody on that side of the store, when you saw them walking into the break room, they were all smiling and joking. And then you had the other side of the store, which unfortunately I was on. And it was like one of those ominous rain clouds over our heads all the time, and everyone checking their watch to see how much longer they have before they can finally get released. And it was really then that I realized, okay, got to figure this out. Why is it so different? And at first I thought it was just the leader, but I realized there were two completely different cultures in that organization. So I kept that in mind as I started my career and went through college and started my career in the Army. And one day, it was a cold winter day, I was walking across the area where we park our vehicles, our combat vehicles and our trucks. And I talked to my platoon sergeant. This was a Monday, and most units they would do a lot of maintenance on Monday. I'd say, hey, how was the weekend? And he said, oh, it was pretty good, sir. A couple of the guys got into a little bit of trouble. And I said, okay, let's go talk about this. And as we were walking away from the noise of the engines that were starting, I thought, why do we have so many problems in this organization? I had just taken over maybe a week or two prior, and all of the classic ills, if you will, of a company or any organization that has poor culture. And it doesn't matter if it's a civilian organization or a military organization. Mm-hmm. Things like, we weren't retaining our best talent. Mm-hmm. We were having a lot of safety accidents. We had problems with drugs and alcohol. You name people not being disciplined as far as keeping keeping all of their property, all of their equipment and things like that, both accounted for and maintained. And I didn't know what to do. It seemed so overwhelming.
Right. If you walk into an organization and you're like, everything is a mess.
So what I did was I started studying. I read as much as I could. The other thing I did, I observed other organizations that didn't seem to have these problems,
Okay.
and really dug in and say, why is it so much different? Why are they able to retain their best talent, and why are they able to actually perform their mission better? And I tell you, I'm a slow learner. It probably took me about 10 years before I really got it, before I really understood the elements of culture and how they work together. And then it took me probably, actually it didn't take me, but I spent the next 25 years really refining that framework, the process on of how to create great culture. Because oftentimes people think culture, it's just this sort of soft thing and you can't really get your arms around it and it kind of
Exactly.
just happens. Well, I tell you, if you're not deliberate about nurturing the culture you want in your organization, you'll still get a culture, but you're probably not going to like it.
That's right, exactly. My thoughts exactly. What was the first thing that you ended up doing? Like, what was the first action you took, big or small, with your new platoon? Well, you had to study a little bit, you had to learn, but you knew something had to change.
Absolutely. The first thing that I did was I ensured that everyone understood what our purpose was. And not just sort of that first level, but as you dig deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, what is that inspiring purpose behind what we do? Why is it so important? And in our case, we were stationed in West Germany at the time, and our purpose was to defend West Germany and NATO from Warsaw Pact aggression. And everyone understood what the results would be if we weren't able to do that. But you don't have to be in a military organization to really look at that and build a compelling purpose.
Right.
I've got a friend of mine. He's the CEO, or was the CEO of a brush company, United Rotary Brush.
Like
And
hairbrush?
no, think of like the
Oh, like an end.
street cleaners and those big wide cylindrical brushes they use to clean airfields and everything like that, you know.
Okay.
So their purpose wasn't, he dissected that and, kept asking why. Their purpose was not to manufacture brushes. Their purpose was to ensure that people were able to get home, travel safely back to their families at the end of the day. I mean, you look at, I mean, you compare that to we're making brushes, I mean, that's what I would cut. Would call a compelling and inspiring purpose that he developed. And he's right. Streets aren't cleared and sidewalks aren't cleaned and runways aren't swept. And I mean, all of those things can could contribute to an individual not being able to get home safely to their family.
So you took all of this experience and your time and you put it into your book. It's called Conquer Your Culture, a CEO's Simple Proven Guide to an Exceptional and Inspiring Company Environment. So my first question is culture something that you can conquer? Because I've never seen a culture t a title of a culture book or an article use the verb conquer. Is that even possible?
Well, there are some organizations that I believe have conquered it. Now, for most organizations that they would consider that probably an aspirational goal, but I'll give you one great example, the WD-40 company. The WD-40, if you look at Gallup's polls on employee engagement, which is a pretty good measure of the cult of your culture. The US, in fact, we went down again this year. I think we're down to 32% of all employees are engaged on average across the US, in fact, US and Canada. By the way, and we're one of the best in the world. But at WD-40 company for decades, they've been 92, 93, 94% of their employees are engaged. So, I mean, there are some companies that do it. And the reason WD-40 company was able to do it was because their CEO, Gary Ridge, he made it a priority. He understood that you have to be purposeful about building your culture. It
We
can't
actually,
be a nice to do thing, something we talk about once a quarter. It's got to literally be a daily, a daily process and a daily effort.
just had Gary on the program a few episodes ago, and he's really wonderful with his new book, Any Dumbass Can Do It. And I think you nailed it, which is that you have to be intentional and prioritize it. And I talk the many, many leaders that I talk to are now, of the mind. They get it. They're like, yeah, I get the culture. I get how important it is, but it's not the thing that we got to focus on right now. And it's never going to be, right? Like if you don't understand that, it's never going to be. So, tell me, take me through the outline. You've sort of set up this promise, simple proven guide. So what is your framework? And let's move then we'll take that and move it into talking about what a lot of your clients are talking to you about, which is they're scared about the change that is coming with AI. So lay out the framework for me first.
Again, this is a framework that I've really spent 25 years developing and tweaking along the way. But I've interviewed probably about 240, 250 CEOs. First question I always ask them is, culture important? I've yet to have anyone say no. And I
Right.
think most of them believe it. I think
That's right.
most of them believe it.
Yep.
And I'll have CEOs, they'll tell me, you know what? That's the most important thing that I do as a CEO is drive the culture. So then the next question I ask them is, okay, describe the culture you're trying to build in this organization. Boy, I tell you what, that funnel narrows very, very rapidly. Very rapidly. Because again, people think, well, if we're just conscious of it, if we're just, kind of aware of it, then it's going to happen. And it's not. So defining and identifying that desired culture is the very first step. Just like any goal, anything a company is going to
Just
try
like
to do,
anything else in
set the
business,
goal, set
what
the
is it?
goals.
Right.
What are
Yeah,
we
yeah,
going
yeah.
for?
Yep.
And so you've got to be able to describe that. And oh, by the way, you can't describe it in terms like I want it to be empowering and inclusive and those types of words. I go, no. What does it look, sound, taste, feel, and smell like to work in that company? Because you're going to have to measure your company against those standards. So if you have something that you can't even measure, well, you've already put yourself way behind. And again, most everyone I talk to, they get that. Yeah, you're right. You're right. We got to describe it. And then even those, after we work through that with CEOs and even CEOs that can describe the culture that they're trying to build, the next question I ask is, okay, so how do you do it? They're like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you've identified and described a goal that your company's trying to achieve with respect to the culture that you're building in this organization. So how do you get there? Well, you have to build a strategy. And again, this is, I mean, this is strategic planning 101. This is not anything new. It's how do you apply it? And this was the most challenging thing that I found in my career was, excuse me, to be able to develop a strategy. Because to develop a strategy, you got to have a framework. So I matured over time the framework where I have five elements of the strategy. The first is purpose. We already talked about it. Absolutely, you got to have a compelling purpose for people to come to work every day so that they
Violently
get
agree.
right.
Violently agree.
The next is the leader. And I describe it, and in fact, that leader is so important because depending upon the organization and what level in the organization, they're the ones who control the resources that can drive that. So in a company, that's the CEO. I'm no offense to charos out there and culture and chief people officers and those types of things, but they don't control the resources. And as we know, you could tell what's important to an organization based on where the resources are going
That's right.
to include the CEO's time. So it's purpose, the leader, then it's people. Making sure that you have the right people, that you're developing the right skills, that everybody understands what they should expect from the company, and the company's very clear about what they expect from the employees. And then the next is purpose, the leader, people, process is the next one. And this is one of that takes people, sets them off kilter a little bit. I get a lot of, well, what do you mean process? We're not a, this was not a Lean Six Sigma project. We're not worried about, we're not a manufacturer. Well, process is just very simply how the work gets done. And you can tell the real culture of an organization, not what they've got plastered up on the hallways and on their stationery and things like that, but the real culture about how the work gets done. I went into one company, I was talking to their CEO, and he was telling me, it's really, really important for him that he pushes down authority it throughout the organization so that decisions are made at the lowest level possible.
Sounds good.
Sounds great. Sounds great. So we're walking around, and in fact, we were walking in the office space of this. It was a manufacturing company, and I see a guy load taking boxes off of a cart and putting them on a shelf. And I look in there and say, "Oh, okay, he's taking printer paper, just off a." Off the cart that he probably brought it from a car, his car from, and put on the shelf. And I know he's checking stuff off on this paperwork. So I introduced myself and talked to him a little bit and, asked him a few questions about the company. I go, can I see that paper? And sure enough, when he identified, because that was sort of an additional duty for him, extra responsibility, when he identified things that need to be purchased, he had to put them on this form. He had to have his supervisor sign off on it. Then he had to have his supervisor's supervisor sign off on
For
it.
printer paper.
Exactly, for printer paper. Doesn't sound like a good use of time.
That's
And I
not
even
very
asked him, I
efficient.
said, has your supervisor ever denied one of the requests? He's like, no, never. She's never done that. I go, how long have you been doing this? He goes, 4 years. I said, okay. And has your supervisor's supervisor ever turned a request down? And he's like, no. In fact, I doubt she even looks at it. So again, how the work gets done, how we're And I won't go because I could talk an hour about decision making, but making sure that the decision making is probably the most important process in your organization. what decisions need to be made at what levels, what authorities do people have, and do they know that?
Yeah. When you brought that story back to the CEO, what was their response?
Oh, the CEO is standing next to me.
Uh-huh.
So and
you're like, hey, wait a minute. I thought you said you gave everybody authority.
Yeah.
What did you, I mean, right? Like, what was
well,
the
I didn't
response?
Do that. I didn't do that in front of, you know, in front of one of the employees.
That's why you're an expert. That's fine.
But we talked, we definitely talked about it later. And we identified, you know, what are some things that, you know, you could push down those responsibilities. And what we found was most people didn't know what decisions they were authorized to make. So to be risk avoidance, you just push them up.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that problem's off your hands.
Exactly.
You pushed it up to somebody else, but all you've done is cost more money, more time, you know, more frustration on people's.
Yeah. It's very inefficient
on people's part.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like I've seen companies that require receipts for travel.
Yeah.
Reimbursement,
yeah.
like
yeah.
to the penny.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, well,
you're looking at the wrong problem, maybe.
Yeah, I'm like, I tipped the, you know, the company's $350 million in debt, and you're having someone spend an hour because they've got to chase someone down to write a statement that they tipped the SkyCap $5 at the airport.
Exactly. All right, so we've got purpose, leader, people, process. What's number five?
And what ties them all together is communication.
Ah, okay.
And I mean that not only from sort of a technical way of, you know, how well do you communicate, but it has to be like everything else. It's got to be purposeful. Have you designed, do you have the right pathways in your organization? You know, depending upon your organization, you know, you may want to, you know, people to be able to, you know, bypass their supervisor for certain things and, you know, to speed certain decisions. And again, you got to be personal and you got to figure out what you're going to do. Okay. If I'm the CEO, I want to hold a quarterly town hall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a, you know, that's a vehicle. And these are the kinds of things I'm going to talk about. And you've got to think that through. It's not just, hey, you know what? A couple of weeks, let's have a town hall. You've got to sort that out in great detail. The other piece of that, when you talk about communication, is related to the decision making piece. Who makes what? Who communicates what to whom?
Yeah.
For example, during COVID. I can't remember the name of the company offhand, but there was a company where the CEO fired 800 people on a Zoom call.
Yeah, right. I remember that story.
You remember that, you know?
Yeah, I remember that story.
You know, the CEO, when they asked, when, you know, he's done interviews and things like that since then, he's like, well, you know, I thought that they should know that it's coming from the top. I go, okay, that's a technique, but you got to, you know, you got to, you. But there wasn't a lot of thought through that of, hey, you know, don't you want to, even if you have to push it down a level or two, don't you want people that those employees truly know and work with to give them that news? So that ties it all together. You got to have a plan. It's got to be deliberate.
Yeah.
You got to figure out, you know, things like in a crisis.
Yeah.
Hey, we had our, you know, our data was breached. Our network was breached.
And what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You know, who's going to notify the clients? Who's going to notify the vendors? Who's going to notify the board? When do you report that to the FBI?
Yeah.
Under what, and who does it?
Yeah.
Because during the crisis is not the time to figure it out.
That's right. That's right.
It's to have a plan. And then not only have a plan, but actually exercise it.
So let's bring this process into the here and now.
Yeah.
Before we started, I asked you what was the number one concern of your clients recently. And you said that everyone is You didn't say panicked, but I feel like I heard panicked about all leaders are panicked about AI and what it's going to do to their people. These are the leaders. They're listening to the anxiety of their people. They have their own anxieties about it. So, and what you described previously, of course, culture, it's going to, this change is happening regardless of whether you are in control of it or not. You are going, your organization will be changed by this. So what would you, or what are you recommending? Like, what is the way to, how do I think about this massive change that's about to or is occurring? And what is a leader's, what is it that you advise to your leaders around considering how to grapple with what they, a change that they don't even know, right? It's not like, hey, we're going to enter a new market. Here's the change. It's something is happening and we have to do something about, I don't even know what, right? And everybody's panicking. So what do you do? What are you telling these folks?
That's a great question, Josh. We're in an environment where a lot of leaders still haven't really sorted through the post-COVID workplace
On
locations.
top of that,
Is it return to office? Are you allowing hybrid? If so, how are you doing it? Are you allowing remote, et cetera, et cetera? So now, there was already sand in those gears. Now we've thrown a wrench in between those gears as well. And it really goes back to the actions and the policies within that organization. They got to go back to their strategy. What is it they're trying to do as a business? Does and assess the environment, just like you would with any to assess, where you are as a business within the, both external and internal environments, and identify, okay, where are we? What part of our operations or organization are going to be more affected than others? In the, we were talking earlier, people that are doing routine, repetitive tasks that require, bringing some information together from various sources, they're extraordinarily nervous. And I don't blame them, because that's, especially right now where we're at with AI, that's really the sweet spot of AI, is
I can
being
relate to
able to
that.
go out and very rapidly get all this information, bring it together, and be able to pull together just a part of something that might lead, that'll lead to a decision. They're extraordinarily worried about it. The people who are your higher level knowledge workers who have to be able to integrate many things in a complex environment, who have to look at every problem, every issue through the lens of what's the comp, how does this align with the company's strategy? How does it affect its people? Are there facilities involved? Is there training involved? Is there education involved? Those types of tasks, where particularly where there's a lot of trade-offs and they affect people significantly, those, we're not seeing yet that AI is going to impact them. And, if you're a carpenter, an electrician, or a mason, bricklayer, those folks aren't, or automotive mechanic, those folks aren't worried at all.
That's
Not
right.
that robotics and AI, will be able to do some tasks, but it's going to be, far into the future. Same with the medical field.
Okay. That's all well and good. And when you are describing, you're saying one of the things that you feel is a particular challenge for your executives is defining the culture they want, defining the future they want. And where I see this going, butting up against what's happening right now is they didn't choose this. How do you get them to define what the future state will be? Most people are not good at envisioning what doesn't exist. But here we are, and you have to, everything's changing weekly. How do you actually help a leader imagine what their culture or their business, even, bigger, will be because of this, right? You have to, these are all these like how might we questions. These are the big questions. And I know a lot of executive CEOs can be cut from that kind of imaginative visionary cloth. Not all of them are, but this is the challenge that I'm seeing. And this is why we can't do it, is because everybody, business is basically built to respond and react no matter how quickly. That's not going to solve for what are we hoping is going to happen. I don't have all the information. People don't like to make decisions when they don't have the information. You'll never have the information. What now?
Well, there's a special magic eight ball that they're developing
You
that
have it.
you.
Yeah, that's right.
But even in the Army and Department of Defense, in fact, my last job in the Army was to look at, what types of equipment, what types of capabilities is the Army going to need 20, 40, 50 years from now? And the only thing we knew for sure is we were going to get it wrong. It wasn't going to look the way we thought it's going to look. The goal is to be as little wrong as possible. And
Agreed.
the way we did it, and the way that CEOs and leaders can do it, is by educating themselves and staying abreast of the changes. AI isn't something you look at, once a quarter and say, okay, what's the new capability? Heaven forbid, not, once a year. So they have to educate themselves on what's the capability, how could that be applied to my organization, how might my competitors apply that to their organization, and how might it impact the external environment? Are there new threats? Are there new opportunities based on this? But it's educating themselves on what it is AI is doing, and literally keeping a pulse of it on a day-to-day basis.
So your minimum, I love this acknowledging from the get-go, you're going to screw this. You're not going to be able to predict this, because that is the fear that people have. So if they know 100, if you can say 100%, the 100% certainty, you have to do this and you're going to get it wrong, then we go, okay, well, at least that's fine, right? And then we can say, okay, how do we reduce the how far off we are? And as I understand the way that a lot of military leaders will lead is by making in the moment decisions. They will have a plan and then they will adapt that plan. And I think the big shift here, David, is that we are, that leaders, executives have to understand that they can't just do a week-long visioning session and you're set for the next 3 years, the next year, even the next quarter. It's like, what kind of plan? What does it look like to build a plan that is meant to be changed as you're learning, as you're changing, right? And that's the problem. Most organizations aren't built for that. And that's where I think we're going to see some real challenges in the next couple of years.
In 1989, standing on the West German Czechoslovakian border, frontier's freedom. Or freedom's frontier. If you'd have told me that wall, the border was going to come down, the wall was going to come down, and there'd be one Germany, and it would just, without a shot being fired, really ending in a whimper, I certainly wouldn't have believed it. So you've got to look at what are some possibilities. I think that business simulations, what we call the military war gaming, I think those are key to helping develop your strategy and figuring out, what do we think what do we think the future is going to look like? And, you know, what do we, you know, what's most probable? And then you also could look at what's the most dangerous from your organization's perspective.
Right, the
What
threat.
could what are the things that if AI started being able to do, might your company go the way of the buggy whip maker?
Right.
So
Yeah. Yeah.
and the way you do that is, you know, and there's business simulations and you can bring people in, do we call it a tabletop exercise. You got to bring experts in that do have that knowledge and know not only what's the capabilities that are available today, but what's being done, what kind of research and development's being done out in industry or in academia, to be able to help inform that process. And I'm a firm believer in every, especially major decision that your company makes, is that you have someone that red teams that decision. Somebody who's, we call it devil's advocate or whatever, somebody who very credibly challenges the facts and the assumptions that you're basing that decision on.
That's a lot of work, but I you know, that is the job of the executive team to be able to think like this. And I think we are at a moment where I don't know. It's almost like there's a different kind of executive maybe emerging, and that is we're going to see a lot of companies rise and fall, I think, because of this major turnover, which is great for business, but real hard for the people running those businesses. So, Dave Komar, retired U.S. Army Brigadier General, author, speaker, and president of EOA Inc. or EDA Inc.
EDA,
I
thank you.
apologize. I wrote my D wrong here on my notes. EDA Inc. You can learn more about him and his work at edainc.io. Dave, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of what you have learned in your extensive career and how to conquer cultures and envision possibly what's next.
I appreciate it, Josh. Thank you so much for what you're doing, because not just an opportunity for me to share, but also, you know, now watching your podcast and learning from other people. You've already had some, you know, amazing leaders on, you know, what you're doing for the community is tremendous. I'm very active also on LinkedIn. So if you go to David Komar, I think there's only a couple of us,
Yeah.
and you'll recognize my book,
Yeah.
Conquer Culture,
Conquer your culture.
which is available on Amazon. Yeah, these are the kinds of forums that really help leaders, because it's another way to get in front of other audiences, get other views that you would not otherwise have access to. So thank you very much for doing this, Josh.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. That's what we're trying to do. Appreciate it. Check us out on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. If you are interested and want to watch your podcast materials, we're there too. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.